Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. The League of United Latin American Citizens is the nation's oldest and largest Latino civil rights organization. It was founded in 1929 in Corpus Christi. A man important in the founding of this organization has been little known to Mexican-American civil rights history. Alonso S. Perales was born into poverty in South Texas in 1898, orphaned at a young age, and rose to prominence as a veteran, an attorney, an author, and a diplomat. Perales was arguably a controversial figure. He was criticized not just by white racists, but by Mexican-American civil leaders of the time, and even by modern Chicano historians, for LULAC's emphasis on U.S. citizenship and English as its official language. But Perales is largely forgotten in history. Dr. Cynthia E. Orozco is Professor Emeritus in History from Eastern New Mexico University in Ruidoso, New Mexico. She's the author of the first comprehensive biography of Alonso Perales and argues he's one of the most influential Mexican Americans of the 20th century. Orozco explains why Perales was essentially erased from the Mexican American civil rights conversation.
As we know, there really was no Chicano studies, Mexican-American studies in 1960. There also was no attempt to collect Mexican-American archives in 1960. And while the Mexican-American Library Program Project was created at the University of Texas in Austin in the mid-70s, there was an attempt to collect his papers. At the time, his widow was not willing to let them go. She felt they were still too personal. She was 99 when she passed.
Wow.
Perales was born around 1898 or so, and so he lived to be about 60 years old. Mm-hmm. So since there were no archives, it was not possible to see his significance. However, the other factor, I guess we could say, is that when LULAC was founded, and he is the principal founder of the League of United Latin American Citizens, it was founded in Corpus Christi, and the first president was Ben Garza. However, it is Perales who had the idea to create the LULAC. Previously, here in San Antonio, there was an organization called the Order Sons of America, Orden Hijos de America, since 1921, that Santiago Tafoya was in charge of and actually controlled. There were seven chapters that went into South Texas, but there were splinter groups, so it was already having problems. Alonso Perales changed the nature of the idea of the Order Sons of America, and it was his idea to create the LULAC, to merge some groups that had separated from the Order Sons and to create the LULAC. So again, because Perales died a long time ago, because there were no archives, and also because there has been a Chicano movement bias against those who came earlier, younger generations are often critical of those before them. People had no knowledge of what Perales or LULAC had done. There was no written history. And to date, there is not a good full history of the LULAC organization. There's been a couple of attempts, but I would say none of them are particularly correct and insightful. So that is part of the reason we have little knowledge about Perales.
And so why was it that LULAC might have maybe rubbed the Chicano movement the wrong way when they look back on it?
Yes. Okay, so the Chicano movement was really more than anything a youth movement. And as we know, the younger generation also always has a disdain for the elders. Again, they had no knowledge of their history or activism, but also because they saw LULAC as an assimilationist organization. The Chicano movement by that time, the 60s and 70s, we were trying to recover more of the Spanish language and the Mexican-American culture. Of course, when LULAC was created in the 1920s, it was important and essential to learn English. So LULAC, they had to stress the English language, and within the Constitution, they actually said English is our official language. So that was one thing that the young activists did not like. Also, LULAC emerged as a Mexican-American organization, and it did not want to include recent Mexican immigrants. Again, the year is 1929, and we understand that many people had come from Mexico because of the Mexican Revolution, and it was critical for the LULAC members to say, this is our homeland, we are not from Mexico, we don't plan to return to Mexico, and we don't want to get involved in Mexico's politics, which would have happened had they had Mexican citizens. Not to mention that some of those folks could have been deported. So it was important to make it a Mexican-American organization. I should also say that there has also been a bias against the so-called middle class within the Chicano movement historians' vantage point, with the understanding that they themselves are middle class, and there's been a over-romanticization of the working class. And again, what they don't understand is that LULAC sought to uplift the working class. And these were lower middle class folks, a colonized middle class, folks who were born working class for the most part and wanted to uplift, protect, and serve the Mexican community, including the Mexican immigrants. For example, when they fought for non-segregation of the schools, they weren't saying we only want Mexican-American children in the schools. They were saying we want all people of Mexican descent children to have an education.
So it wasn't just, you know, assimilationist, as you have written in your book, that a lot of people have criticized LULAC for being a group that is more about assimilation than inclusion.
Well, again, we need inclusion. We still need inclusion. It was LULAC that was at the forefront of the litigation against the segregated schools. The very first class action lawsuit against the segregated schools was launched by LULAC in the Salvatierra versus Del Rio case in the early 30s in Del Rio. And of course, they were also the major entity behind the Delgado versus Bastrop in 1948, which actually did end the segregated schools in Texas. Mostly, again, we have too few historians. I myself am only the 13th Mexican-American woman in the country to have a PhD in history, and we are only about 110. We have very few Chicano historians. We do not have enough of our history in the textbooks, and therefore there's not enough research, and therefore we don't have more knowledge about our community. Here's what most people don't know about Perales. I really would go on to argue that Perales was our Latino Martin Luther King. And I say that with the understanding that LULAC will celebrate its 100th anniversary in about 5 years. LULAC has been the most significant Latino civil rights organization in the country, active on every single front, whether it's immigration, education, etc. Also, Perales was an elite that was born into the working class and became an orphan. He was somebody that could have ended up on the streets. Perales had an eighth grade education leaving Alice, Texas, but went on to Washington, D.C. and became a lawyer and became a U.S. diplomat. He was the second or third Latino lawyer in Texas. He became a diplomat for the United States government in the 1920s, when he himself was in his 20s, he went on about 13 different diplomatic missions in the United States. He became an attorney, again, taking on all kinds of issues. One example here in San Antonio, he, along with Carlos Cadena, they filed a lawsuit against the racial covenants in real estate so that people could buy a house with real estate covenants saying you could not if you were Mexican or so-called Negro at the time. Perales was also a public intellectual. He wrote two books. He wrote a book called In Defense of the Mi Raza in 1936, two volumes, chronicling his activities and his activism. And also he wrote a book called Are We Good Neighbors? So he was a critic of the good neighbor practices and the lack of neighborliness between whites and Latinos. Had he died much later, let's say in the 70s or 80s, we would know who he is today. He would be a household name.
Cynthia Orozco is Professor Emeritus in History from Eastern New Mexico University in Ruidoso. She's the author of Pioneer of Mexican-American Civil Rights, Alonso S. Perales, the first comprehensive biography of LULAC's co-founder. When we come back, Orozco wasn't the first person to try to bring Alonso Perales out from the shadows of Mexican-American civil rights history. That path was blazed by South Texas activist and essayist Adela Sloss Vento.
She wrote a biography of Perales in 1977 or 78, and she did so because she was disappointed that no academic had done so, and so she took it upon herself.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. LULAC was primarily an organization for men when it was founded 95 years ago in an effort to unify a group of Mexican-American organizations under a single set of objectives and a single constitution. Cynthia Orozco is a professor emeritus of history at Eastern New Mexico University in Ruidoso and the author of a comprehensive biography of one of LULAC's co-founders, Alonso Perales. Orozco argues that women played a role in LULAC, even though they were largely excluded from membership for several years.
In 1929, when LULAC was founded, it was founded only by men, for men. And I think what happened is they realized that there were already a number of important women and regular women, ordinary women, who were contributing to the cause. And I think at some point they realized, very late, I mean, early 30s, they were formed in 1929, but they realized that they should include women, and so they did so. However, they were included in separate chapters, and mostly women participated in separate chapters up until we have the women's movement of the late 60s and 70s. Today, we have LULAC is more than 50% women, and we have had now three national women presidents. There's a need for more women's leadership, but women are well represented today.
And speaking of women, there was one woman at the time who was one of Alonso Perales' biggest champions, and you've written about her, Adela Sloss Vento. Can you tell us a little bit more about her?
Yes. Adela Sloss Vento was born in San Juan and then lived in Edinburgh, and she was a civil rights activist since 1927. She was active all her life in what we call the Mexican-American Civil Rights Movement and the Chicano Movement, and I make a distinction between the two, one being before the 60s and the others in the 60s and 70s. She wrote a biography of Perales in 1977 or 78, and she did so because she was disappointed that no academic had done so, and so she took it upon herself. She was his colleague, his co-worker, and knew him very well personally. She, like him, wrote numerous articles for Spanish and English newspapers criticizing racism and segregation. She did not join LULAC. She was highly independent. She didn't join Ladies LULAC. But nonetheless, through her articles and through some of the organizations, she was a critic of Texas racism.
Well, we're going to kind of circle around now. Let's go back to when you were a student and you discovered Alonso Perales and you discovered that here's a figure that is so underrepresented in this conversation of Mexican-American civil rights. Why did you feel that you needed to take that next step and sort of join in that path that Adela Sloss Vento had carved out?
Well, first of all, I took my very first Chicano history class in 1978 at UT Austin. And of course, like many, I discovered history that had not been taught to us in the schools. So I was hooked at that point and became a young historian. I conducted original research as a sophomore first writing a 20 or 30 page paper with I don't know how many footnotes, but went on to write a senior honors thesis. I was introduced by Adelis Los Ventos' son, Dr. Vento. He told me about her and he allowed me to visit with her. She shared with me an archive of her material, so I knew that she had important papers. She kept stressing the male leaders, and she really did not identify her own significance. So I went on to UCLA and wrote my dissertation. My dissertation was on the origins of LULAC. It was later published by UT Press as No Mexicans, Women, or Dogs Allowed, The Rise of the Mexican-American Civil Rights Movement. And that book stressed that it was a social movement, and I tried to not focus on one particular leader. So I profiled a number of folks. Years went by, and then the Perales papers arrived at the University of Houston. There was a major conference about Perales. That's when I saw in the Perales papers Adelis Los Ventos manuscripts, short manuscripts. I thought about writing a small pamphlet along with her son, and then we actually ended up writing two books. Right around that same time, after that book had come out, I was approached to write the Perales biography. So that's why that occurred at that particular time, because his papers were now available, and really I was the best person with the most knowledge about Perales and LULAC to write that biography.
And you had a chance to meet his widow as well.
Yes. Actually, when I was an undergraduate, I did see the Perales papers in her home here in San Antonio. She was very protective of him, so I did get to meet her. She herself was not an activist. She was more concerned with the social graces and attending social functions. But she herself was a very intelligent woman and even owned a bookstore here in San Antonio.
Well, now Perales is starting to get more attention. Your book has come out. It's garnering some attention. Now we have this exhibit that's here now in San Antonio at the Mexican-American Civil Rights Institute. Were you approached to be a part of that, or did you suggest it to Macri?
No, actually, Macri approached me. Dr. Sara Gould had heard a number of my presentations, was familiar with my book. She approached Humanities Texas, and they funded this idea of hers. I'm very excited that it's traveling. Well, first of all, that it exists, because most books never become part of an exhibit. And then secondly, that we'll be traveling, and hopefully it will reach people that would never have picked up a book, that would never have known about him.
I ask this question sometimes of many people in various topics. Do you think that maybe this is the right time for this story to come out? Is this sort of the right time and place?
Well, I would say the right time would have been 1962. However, since that did not happen, I would say yes, again, because we have significant anti-Mexican legislation. That's exactly the kind of legislation that Perales was fighting against. And again, the book chronicles all of the various efforts by Perales. And it is shocking to learn of how he was active at the so-called lowest levels, meaning he taught adult education on the West Side, all the way to testifying in Congress. So this was a man very comfortable with the working class, completely bilingual, completely with a global hemispheric perspective, somebody who was an excellent orator, a good debater, somebody who wrote over 1,000 articles in newspapers, especially La Prensa, which existed here at that time, that version of La Prensa from around 1913 to the early 60s. Perales was key. I don't know if would have had a Henry B. Gonzalez as a congressman without the LULAC organization. I always say there also is no Gus Garcia without Alonso Perales. There is no Carlos Cadena also at that level. And again, we have the trajectory of having, of course, the Henry Cisneros, the Julian Castro, but really LULAC is so key to the improvement of race relations in San Antonio. You cannot understand 20th century San Antonio if you don't know about Perales and LULAC.
And I understand that your work does not end with this book. You have other projects working right now.
Yes. So currently I'm working on the history of women in LULAC. It'll focus on the initial exclusion, the inclusion into ladies' LULAC, segregated chapters for women. And I want to focus on the kinds of things that women did, because they did almost everything that the men did. They were active in desegregation. They were active in getting out the vote. So they're also highly political. I want to debunk the myth that LULAC women simply socialize and serve the men. There's a focus on the rise of women in the organization and focusing on some key women in the organization as well. And then the last major project I will have that is LULAC related is a general history of the LULAC organization. Again, because in 2029 we have the centennial, 100 years. If you see the LULAC website, you will see a timeline. I actually developed that timeline in 1990 when I was a graduate student. I recently updated it. The LULAC asked me to update it. So it'll be available soon. But it will give people a more holistic idea of everything that LULAC has done up to the present.
And it took LULAC considerable time for them to also acknowledge Perales for who he was, correct?
Well, LULAC, like everybody else, does not have the knowledge that we get everywhere. And, I mean, LULAC is no different in terms of having the knowledge and information. So Perales has been recognized within LULAC. Again, LULAC is multi-level, national, state, district, local, etc. But, you know, we need documentaries. You know, we need children's books. We need this in the textbooks. We need it at all levels. And this traveling exhibit contributes to that.
Well, anything else that you'd like to add to this conversation?
I want people to know that one of the most interesting statements that Perales made in his letters, actually, he asked that the Mexican be respected because he also was on the vanguard against the racial violence and lynching of the 1920s. And he understood, regardless of class and regardless of education, people like him were still seen as dirty Mexicans at the time. And again, in this era of anti-immigrant, anti-Mexican sentiment, we need everybody in whatever way to do their part to work against the racism that we're seeing in modern day times.
Dr. Cynthia E. Orozco is a professor emeritus of history at Eastern New Mexico University in Ruidoso, New Mexico. She's the author of Pioneer of Mexican-American Civil Rights, Alonso S. Perales. Orozco is also the author of No Mexicans, Women, or Dogs Allowed, The Rise of the Mexican-American Civil Rights Movement, and of Agent of Change, Adelas Las Vento, Mexican-American Civil Rights Activist and Texas Feminist. We spoke at San Antonio's Bazan Library on the same day an Alonso Perales exhibit opened at the nearby Mexican-American Civil Rights Institute Visitor Center. The exhibit consists of informative panels and some of Perales' personal items, including his desk, his top hat and gloves, and family photos. Find out more about the Alonso S. Perales Civil Rights Trailblazer Traveling Exhibit at tpr.org, and that's where you can also see some photos from the exhibit. The U.S. Hispanic Literary Heritage Program at the University of Houston now houses Alonso Perales' papers. We have a link to that digital collection at tpr.org. Thanks for joining us today for Fronteras. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Marian Navarro. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.